Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, quick question. How is your social battery doing right now? I'll be honest, mine is a bit on the low side. Maybe it's not setting enough boundaries or just a typical slowdown after our super hectic work schedule. It's so easy to overlook our social needs or overextend ourselves, isn't it? What's your ideal balance of socializing? And how do you recharge? Whether you find energy in crowds or need more time to yourself, understanding your social needs is crucial. I remember a time when I struggled to balance my social engagement with my personal downtime. Y'all know us, we're always outside. So what really helped me was learning to recognize my limits and prioritizing my well-being. I've heard plenty of my peers champion therapy as a great tool for gaining this kind of insight. It's not just for big life issues. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life by equipping you with the skills to manage your social energy effectively. So if you're considering therapy, why not check out BetterHelp? It's an entirely online service, making it incredibly convenient and adaptable to your lifestyle. Just start with a quick questionnaire and you'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And if you feel the need to switch therapists for any reason, you can do so at any time without any extra cost. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait, don't hesitate, head over there now.
What would be a good percentage to use, you know, so that way I can just keep the same number going in there all the time?
Yeah. I don't really like percentages too much. I like actual numbers, because I could say 10%, 15%, but it really just depends on your situation. So I always try to look at like discretionary income. So like how much money is left over at the end of the month. So that's the first, like, first we got to see like how much money is left over at the end of the month, right? So it's like one or two things is happening. Either, and this is just like broad range statement, either you have money left over at the end of the month or you don't, or you're running in a deficit. So if you have money left over, you got to see how much money you have left over. So if it's like, okay, I have $1,000 left over after all my bills are paid, after, you know, I have some fun every single month, I have at least $1,000 left over, right? So just using that number, I personally would probably do somewhere along the lines of like putting 30% of that money into like savings until you have, you know, 6 to 12 months of savings, because that's important. And then I probably would look to invest 30%. So now that's like 60% of the money right there. And then maybe, you know, 20% would go to, you know, a kid's account. 20 to 15% will go to the kid's account. And then the rest is just kind of left for like miscellaneous. So that's what I would kind of go by, more so than like, you know, just a percent of like your total income, because I could say 10% of your income, but if that might be too much. So it's really more of a percentage of your discretionary income. And the discretionary income, I would say probably like 20%, 20 to 15% of the discretionary income that you can afford to, you know, put away.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that, man. That helped me out a lot.
Nah, no problem, brother. All
right, y'all have a good one.
All right, Taryn, we're coming to you. Unmute yourself, please.
All right, hello. I'm good. And you, Rashad?
I'm good.
All right, Magna. I have a question. What are the disadvantages of an S-Corp? I kind of think I know a little bit about the advantages in comparison to an LLC, but what are the disadvantages of an S-Corp?
It's more structured. I think Ms. Business had actually taught a class about this, but you have to pay yourself a salary. So especially like if you're not making, you know, that much money, or if the business is just starting out, it could be kind of pressure on you to, you know, have payroll. So that's something that, you know, definitely could take into consideration. Like, I forgot the number that she said, but I think it's like $100,000, something like that. Like, you should be making like $100,000 in your business before you go to S Corp route. Because yeah, it's definitely a lot more structured, but the off the top of my head, I would think that would be something that, you know, you just definitely have to consider, because you definitely have to put yourself on payroll. And, you know, whereas like a regular LLC, you could just, you know, not pay yourself a month, 2 months, whatever, if not, no money's coming in, or you just want to just, you know, you're real thin that month. So that's something to take into consideration, especially a lot of businesses, especially when they first start, cash flow is very up and down. So, you know, if your cash flow is up and down, you want to make sure you're getting to a point where you have some level of consistent cash flow first.
Okay. Thanks very much. That answered the question. Thanks.
All right. All right. Yod, we're coming to you. Unmute yourself, please.
All right. Good morning. Thanks for coming. My question is, I have 2 questions. My first question is, let's say, like, example, like, I have a mortgage that I was trying to pay early, between like probably like within 7 to 10 years. And also, let's say if I have some money that's coming in, let's say like if I have like between like 2 to 5,000, so like, should I put it in the market? Even I do have automatic payment that contribution that I make every month for my investment on the stock market and crypto and stuff like that. So should I keep, the best thing for me to do, should I like put that money in the stock market, or should I put it toward my mortgage? Even like in the future, I want to like to invest more in real estate. So what would be what would you suggest?
I mean, I think you could do both. I don't think it has to be a one or the other situation. You know, you want to see what's most important. Is paying off your house more important, or do you think you can get a better return in the stock market? And especially if you got a low interest rate, it might be more advantageous to put the money into the market, because, you know, your opportunity cost is probably greater investing in the stock market. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't do both. So, you know, you could maybe if you was going to put $2,000 a month into paying off into your mortgage to pay it off, you know, a lot quicker, maybe you put $500 a month, right? And, you know, that's still going to add up over the course of the year, and you know, could still knock off years of paying off your mortgage. So I would say, you know, see what's most important to you, but you can definitely do both, especially with that amount of money. It's not like it's, you know, a couple of thousand. You can definitely, you know, allocate money to both of them. But the opportunity cost would probably be better investing in the stock market. But I also understand, you know, if you don't want to have the mortgage forever and you want to pay off the property sooner. So, you know, maybe you just do some calculations and see how that would work out if you did it for just a little bit less money than you would have done originally.
My other question is, what the difference between like QQQ and QQQM?
You broke up a little bit. What did you say?
What's the difference between like QQQ and QQQM?
I think QQQM, Troy, I know the Q, the T, but yeah, let me make sure I get the right information on that.
I think it's a mini QQQ, but I would like to know if there's a difference like from the percentage of return or the amount of stocks that they invest in. Because that one is around like 3 something, and then The QQM is around like 144.
Yeah, let me look. I have Troy doing research on it. Get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. And also, for IRA, rough IRA for kids. So like, do they have to be a certain age for to start a rough IRA for kids?
Yeah, they have to be. Well, yes and no. They have to. If you're doing it, if you're not self-employed, then they have to be of working age. Like they have to have a job. The working age depends on what state you live in, but as long as they have working papers and they have a job and they actually have to be working, that's another thing. So as soon as they're able to work, you can do it. But if you're self-employed, it's a little different because you can actually hire your child before they legally have like working papers, as long as they're actually working and they can actually do a job. So obviously like you can't hire a 2-year-old, like, but like if you have like somebody that's like 10 or 11 years old and they're actually doing, you just have to be able to justify it in case you ever get audited. But you have more flexibility and you can hire younger if you're self-employed. But if the child is working just a regular job, whenever, if they could work a job, then they could, you could put money into the IRA.
So basically you cannot do it in a custodial account.
For the IRA?
Yeah, the Roth IRA.
It's a custodial account. It's a Roth IRA.
Oh, okay.
So you still like the child is still a minor. The child's still a minor. So it's not like, you know, you got to set it up for them and you put the money in. But you know, you can have a custodial account where it's just in the market and there's no retirement account attached to it, or it's the retirement account, but it's still a custodial account.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So thank you for coming on the call, even though you're not feeling well. That's very nice of you. And congratulations with the Steve Harvey interview. It was really, really well done. It was great. So you guys must feel so proud of yourselves right now. So thanks a lot for that as well. My question is about my TDA. I am a teacher in New York City, and I have about 10 more years left till I retire. So right now I have... they let you split up your TDA, your tax deferred annuity, into diversified and fixed. So I believe I've always had it like 80-20, but I just realized that the diversified has options and I didn't know that. So there's like a bunch of different options. And I just wanted to know like what's the best way to like pick between the different funds? Because they have like 3 or 4. There's like a sustainable one. There's an international one. Like, do I just go by like the history, or do you think it's better to just stay with like the one they recommend, which I think is just, they call it like the diversified.
Yeah. It's always good to rule of thumb. You always want to look at rate of returns. That's something that's, you know, a cheat code whenever you look at investments, especially like 401k or any type of retirement plan investments. Usually like they'll give you a sheet. And it'll have like, you know, the different funds. So it's like the stable fund, the growth fund, the international fund. And then they'll have like the year to date return, 3-year return, 5-year return, 10-year return since its inception. What I like to do is look at the longest possible time frame. So like 10 years or since its inception, sometimes if it's new, it might not have a 10-year track record. It might have like a 5-year or 4-year track record. But
yeah,
you want to try to look at the longest possible time frame and see which one has usually performed best for that. Usually, like, I haven't really been a big fan on international funds, just me personally, especially like in retirement accounts. Over the last like 10 years, they haven't really done as good as like just international growth funds. So it really just depends on your risk tolerance. But, you know, the growth funds is always going to be something that's going to usually, you know, be the best as far as growth over the course of time. That's like, you know, more large cap companies. But the good thing, and I don't know if they changed it, but I know a few years ago for the fixed account for the city, how much is the fixed account paying? Like 7%, something like that?
It's 7.25. When I started, it was 8.25, but then they lowered it to 7.25. So I was able to get the 8% like the first 2 or 3 years I started teaching, but now it's 7.25. And like I have about 10 more years left. So I have 20 years already, and I have 10 more to go. But the sustainable index gives a greater return, but it's very new. So it's only like a few years old. So I'm like, should I trust that? And then they also say to like switch it right before you're about to retire to just be in the fixed one. So you don't have to worry about like big issues with the market.
Yeah, well, the good thing with that is that that's pretty much unheard of to have a fixed account that earns 7%. So that is one thing that, you know, the New York City school department, that's like really like kind of amazing that they have a fixed account, which is like pretty much, you know, no matter what the stock market does, you can earn 7%. So usually a fixed account in this environment is like 1% or less than 1%. So 7% on a fixed account is extremely, extremely good. So, you know, I wouldn't take it all out of there. Definitely would probably leave some money in there just for the safety purposes of it. Like, you know, if all else fails, if the stock market crashes, you're guaranteed to get 7%. That's not bad. Obviously, you know, that's not as good as if the stock market goes crazy and you get 30% or 20%. But, you know, it's all about diversification. So I would diversify, but I would leave at least like probably 25% in a fixed account, because that's just like a guaranteed insurance almost.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Sedalia. All right. Dwight, we're coming to you. Unmute yourself, please. Dwight, you're unmuted. You should be able to speak. All right. Looks like he's having difficulties too.
Sometimes you got to on the Zoom too. You got to make sure you unmuted on your end too. Like, we can unmute you, but make sure you unmuted on your end so we can.
Yeah, he had unmuted himself, but he wasn't speaking. All right, Dwight, we're going to go to the next person. Natasha, unmute yourself, please.
Hello. I have a question about a trust. Who do I go to start a trust?
Where do you live?
In Maryland.
Well, I know. So the lawyers that we use, you know, the thing with the lawyers that is different, like MG, he could practice in almost any state for the mortgages, but lawyers, they have to be licensed in this state. So I know we've used Sabina a lot. I know she's licensed in New York and New Jersey. I don't know if she's licensed in Maryland, but I think that we had somebody that was licensed in Maryland, because I remember I got that question before from somebody from Maryland. But if not, we can definitely, you know, look. I don't want to give you an answer right now because I don't know off the top of my head, but maybe we could put it in a Facebook group after we, you know, do some research and find some good attorneys. Maybe Magna, maybe that's something that we can just do, period. Like, you know, we can try to, like, you know, highlight some different professionals in different areas of the country, especially the law thing, because that's something that, you know, you, depending on what state you live in, you got to really use the lawyer that's practicing in your state. And that could become a little tricky if you live in states that, you know, we haven't really featured lawyers in that state. So,
okay.
Yeah, the legal club. We have a legal club, actually. So maybe that's something that the legal club can do.
And one more quick question. I remember you were saying it, I think it was 13 or 14, you should put 6,000 in a IRA for your child. Is that in the, it could be an estimate. I think y'all was saying 1 million. Is that 6,000 for when she's 14, or 6,000 every year will equate to that estimate?
Yeah. So what I did, I was on a Breakfast Club when I said that a while ago. I was using an example, like if you put 6,000 a year in from, I believe it was like the example that I gave was like from 14 to 20, I believe, like from 14 to 20. And I just used a hypothetical, like if it earned 10%, I use like QQQ, which, you know, is averaged more than 10% over the last 20 years. But I'm like, all right, if you earn like 10% a year, by the time they're 60, then they will have $1 million. So obviously, you know, it's not like 100% guarantee, because it depends on the market. But that was an example that I had gave just to kind of illustrate the power of investing early. Because if you think about it, even if it's not 6,000, whatever you can do, but that's only like 4 years or, you know, 6 years of investing. And you know, just by the compounding interest and leaving it in for such a long period of time, then that equaled $1 million without even having to put any more money in after the age of 20. So, you know, that was just an example of, you know, the power of compounding interest. And you definitely, and I think the example that I actually gave was with the Roth IRA. The Roth IRA is even better for kids because they don't pay any taxes on it when they take the money out. So now you set up their retirement account when they're young, and you know, by the time they get to retirement, they're gonna have you know, a tremendous amount of money just by the money that was set up for them, you know, while they were teenagers, and that has nothing to do with, you know, their own 401ks or their own IRAs when they get old enough to actually set it up for themselves. So that's definitely a strategy that parents can use for their children whenever they turn legal working age. And the rule is you could put up to 6,000 is the max, but you could put up to whatever the child made. So like if they have a part-time job and let's say they made like $3,000 for the year, then you could put up to, you know, $3,000. But it's not unreasonable to have $6,000, because it's like if they work at like CVS or something like that, you know, they make $500 a month, that's $6,000 a year. So $500 a month, that's not really a lot for a part-time job. So, you know, and then if you're self-employed, it's even better. Because if you're self-employed, then you can hire your child and you can pay them. And when you pay them, you get a tax deduction for the money that you paid them. And then that money you can put into the Roth IRA or an IRA for your child. So that's like a double-edged sword, because now you're actually saving money on taxes and your child is working for you. And you get to save money for their retirement. So a lot of different things that you can do with that. But yeah, that's some different ideas for sure. So as far as the investment side, yeah, the dollar cost average, I think you had talked about that. That's a great way to start. If you, you know, it sounds like you started some with the retirement with the Roth, but I don't know if you have a brokerage account, but if you don't, open a brokerage account, a non-retirement brokerage account. So that's money that is not tied to your retirement. You can invest in that every single month. You spoke about Lawrence's class. So I'm assuming that you've been tapped in with that. So that's great as far as, you know, talk about investing. And then of course we talk about investing every Monday with Market Monday. So, you know, we talk about the ETFs, the index funds, all that stuff. So you can pick a couple of stocks, funds that you feel comfortable with and start putting money in every single month. That's one way to just get the ball rolling and, you know, get into the actual investment game where you're putting money away over a consistent period of time. Now, as far as the pilot situation, obviously from what you're saying, that's a little bit more capital, a lot more capital intensive. So it probably would be difficult to self-raise or self-fund that type of project. Me personally, I'm real big on collaboration. That's something that, you know, we've practiced and we still do to this day is collaborate with different people. And I just personally feel like, you know, you can do a lot more together than you can separate. And even if that means, you know, working with other people for equity, like and giving up equity, like there's nothing wrong with giving up equity. Like we have given up equity and our third partner, Mike, he's a childhood friend of ours. But when we brought him on, we didn't have enough money to actually pay him. So we gave him a part of the company. Now he's our business partner. So I think giving up ownership, giving up a portion of equity and giving up ownership are two different things. Giving up some equity can be a smart move if somebody can add value. That's why you give up equity. If you don't have necessarily have the resources and you need to bring somebody on, now they can provide their talent, their relationships, you know, whatever they can bring to the table. And they're not working for money because now they are part owner in the company. So the company's success is tied to their success. So it's in their best interest for that company to be successful, because the more money that the company makes, the more money that they make, as opposed to just hiring an employee. And, you know, if it's a good employee, then, you know, they'll work as hard just because, you know, that's what they're supposed to do. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of employees that don't care because, you know, it doesn't matter how well the company does or, you know, they're still going to get paid the same amount. So that's why the equity play is not always a bad play. Partnerships are not always bad. It's just a matter of just being intelligent about it, keeping ownership, keeping, you know, a majority stake, things of that nature. So I would approach it from that standpoint. I would approach it from partnerships. Look to see, you say you've been in the industry for a long time. So I'm sure you have a lot of great relationships with different people. And, you know, who knows who would want to work with you or who would want to partner with you and different things of that nature. So that's how I would approach it, as opposed to even thinking about funding it out of my own pocket with that much capital. If it was less capital, but if it's a lot, if it's going to be real, real capital intensive, then, you know, you might want to go a different route.
Okay, that's good, though. That's the partnership is definitely something that's been out there. It's just, again, really holding in or owning in on the or honing in on the ownership piece. We definitely want to be attached. And I'm pretty sure you can tell, like, sometimes people don't take you seriously. But like I said, even with having the experience, it's like that. But that was some good insight. Thank you so much.
No problem.
All right. PMath, we're coming to you. Unmute yourself, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
What's going on? Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, cool. Hey, I just wanted to ask a quick question. I'm sure it's been asked many times. It's about 401k rollover. My specific question is, I have like 3 401ks from the previous employers. I'm going to roll like one of the bigger ones into a new one that I'm participating, that the employer is participating in. But then the two smaller ones, I want to be able to like invest myself. So just kind of to sum it up, I have I had it with Fidelity. I'm going to transfer the ledger amount into a company named The Principal. And I've always traded with TD. I had a brokerage account with Fidelity. But I transferred those funds into TD because just what I've heard is that it's more user friendly, things of that nature. Now my question is, with the other two smaller ones that I'm not going to transfer into the account that's with my employer, I want to have a little bit of flexibility to move those around. So I didn't know if I should just keep the funds with Fidelity and have a separate IRA there, or transfer it into TD where I have my brokerage account. That way, you know, I guess I'm a little confused on what's the benefits of having an IRA with a different company, because I'm not going to put it with the, you know, I'm trying not to roll everything into my my 401k. I'm trying to make sure that I have some flexibility to move it around, you know, as I feel fit.
So yeah, your current 401k is with Fidelity, and you're debating whether you should roll into an IRA with Fidelity or an IRA with TD. Is that the question?
So it's actually with a different. So my current 401k, I'm transferring.
Well, your old 401ks.
Yeah, the old one. Sorry, the old one was with Fidelity. So I'm transferring the old ones one of the old ones, the larger amount, to one that my employer is participating in. That's called the principal. So I'm already just that's kind of just out there. I'm going to just put the bigger one into the one that they're contributing to. But the two smaller ones that I have with Fidelity, I guess I'm trying to figure out if it makes sense to transfer it over to TD, since I'm kind of that's where my brokerage account is, my individual brokerage account. That way I could kind of line things up. That's what I'm thinking. Or I don't even know if there's any benefit of just having it transferring, taking that 401k and turning it into an IRA with Fidelity and just keeping it where it is.
Yeah, I think it depends on whichever one you feel comfortable with, right? Like, I mean, Fidelity, TD, they're both good companies. They're both, you know, very similar. I personally like TD a little bit. I have both. I have Fidelity and TD. I like TD a little better because it just has a better user interface, in my opinion. But right. I mean, it's not like one is dramatically better than the other. So I guess it's just whatever you feel comfortable with, but you can roll it over into a Fidelity IRA and, you know, have, you know, control over it and, you know, pick the investments that you want, or you can roll it over into a TD IRA and have control over and pick the investments that you want. So it really just depends. Honestly, I mean, that's just up to you, like whichever one you feel most comfortable with. Like I said, me personally, I just like TD. I like TD better than Fidelity because I just feel like it has a better user interface. And that's my personal opinion. So, you know, but you can do either or. I mean, there's really no dramatic difference from one than the other. Yeah, you know, it's similar.
Okay, all right. And just the last thing on that. No matter where I go to transfer it, changing that 401k into an IRA, what's really the benefits of the IRA? When I'm am I able to move things around as I feel? Like, because I know I can't do that with the 401k. So I'm assuming that's just the only benefit is the flexibility, right?
Well, a 401k is pretty much like frozen in a sense when you're not working anymore. Not frozen where it's not growing, but when you leave a job, you can't add money to your 401k anymore. You can't borrow from it. You don't have any like advice, and you're stuck with the investments that's provided for you from the 401k. So a 401k has like a menu of different options. Like they have like, let's say, 15 different funds that you can pick and choose from, but you can only invest in those funds. So with an IRA, you get to pick and choose the funds that you want, right? You can add money to it. So like, let's say going forward, like you start a business or your job doesn't have a 401k, your new job doesn't have a 401k, or you can always add money to an IRA. An IRA also can serve as like a central hub where, you know, you might leave multiple different jobs throughout the course of your life and you might have like six different 401ks. That becomes a little difficult to manage, but you can always roll those 401ks into an IRA and have that as like the central hub for all of your old 401ks. So
gotcha. I mean, gotcha.
In a nutshell, it just gives you more flexibility. Gives you more flexibility as far as, you know, being able to pick and choose your investments, and, you know, actually being able to put money into it as well. So those you don't have once you leave the company with an old 401k. So that's really the benefit with the IRA as opposed to keeping the money in the old 401k.
All right. Sounds good. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Andrew, we're coming to you. Unmute yourself, please.
And somebody said in the chat, you can access the IRA. You just pay penalty on it, just like a 401k. If you had like an old 401k and you took the money out before 59 and a half, you pay a penalty on it, but there are some provisions where you can actually take some money out of without paying the penalty tax, but you always pay state and federal tax on an IRA or a 401k. So they're both the same in that regard.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.